DC.
The Birchmere presents The Whispers on October 10th and 11th, and Keiko Matsui, November 2nd. Details at birchmere.com.
I'm Wiza Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Joni with Chuhil DC. This is a very special show for you today where we are going to be really honoring workers and talking about what's happening to federal workers and more through the hour. I'm going to say a little bit more about that in one moment, but I just wanted to share with you that tomorrow, October 7th, marks the second year of genocide in Gaza, and WPFW is spending the entire day from 5 a.m. to midnight discussing this this genocide. We're calling it What Breaks the Heart, Tuesday from 5 a.m. to midnight, joining millions around the world in marking 2 years of genocide. So that is tomorrow all day long. Today, this morning, we're focusing on workers and actually heroes and sheroes. I'm very glad to introduce our first speaker is Paul Asudebe. He is going to be telling a story about what he's been doing, but he's been with us a lot in the past year. This is 2025. I first met Paul in the beginning of the year. He's one of the key organizers with the Federal Unionist Network, and he's going to be talking about a number of things, including what has been going on at HUD. Then in the second hour, we're going to be talking about Black women sheroes with a project called We Are the 92%, and that will also include Black women workers and more. But we're happy to start out with Paul. Good morning, Paul. Hopefully you
Good morning.
I'm very glad to have you on. Again, listeners, who, if you listen to PFW or if you're out there in the streets and the rallies, you may and hopefully remember Paul, very much of an activist this year. I know that for sure. And we invited him on to talk about a special situation that really the whole federal workers are facing. But Paul, well, first tell us what you have been doing with FUN briefly this year, and then we'll jump into what's happening at HUD.
Sure. So as federal workers and our work and our ability to serve the public has been under attack, we've tried to get people the resources and the solidarity and the mindset to actually fight back against that in their workplaces, but not just with their workplaces and with their coworkers, also with the communities that they serve, nonprofits, the faith community, the rest of labor. We want to make sure that people understand that this is an attack on working people in general. And so all working people are our allies in this. And we have to be organized enough to actually interface with the rest of the community. So we've been having rallies to keep people's spirits up. We've been doing a lot of training. We've been doing happy hours. We've been doing just things that get people in the right mindset and with the right skills to talk to their coworkers, let them know that this is not normal and that the best thing that we can do in response to these historic attacks is to come together as coworkers and then with the people that we serve and commit to continuing that service no matter what.
Absolutely. And a little bit later in this half hour, we're going to be sharing what some of the activities that FUN has going on in the next few weeks. But let's get specifically now to you and to HUD. Perhaps you start where you would like. Perhaps you might begin by telling the listeners what's happening at HUD these days that some people, many people are concerned about, or perhaps start with what happened 2 weeks ago.
Yes. So at HUD, we've been facing a lot of attacks basically since the first day of this most recent administration. And I work in the civil rights office. So I knew that there were going to be changes, but the amount of restrictions on our work, the attempts to kick us out of our work through firings and forced resignations and reassignments, the restrictions on our ability to investigate, to charge cases, to actually enforce settlements and create settlements. Every step of the process has been under attack. And because of that, my coworkers and I came together and decided that we couldn't let this go on, because when you lose HUD and you lose the attorneys and staff at HUD, you lose the people that enforce your rights. And these are rights that are so important that they were the response to the assassination of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. That is what Congress did to try to heal the country and make the country more fair, was to make sure that housing is available to everyone, no matter what their race, their sex, their national origin, whether they have a disability or kids. All of that is not supposed to matter in this country. And the only way that can actually be true is if there's people enforcing the law and making sure that the federal government isn't sending out money in a discriminatory way or operating their own housing, their public housing or voucher subsidized housing in a discriminatory way. But under this current administration, that was not happening. And so we acted together as a union, four of us, two of us were public, and we made sure to connect with the civil rights community beforehand and have a media plan beforehand, connect with our national and local unions beforehand. And we filed a report with Congress, with Senator Warren and the HUD Inspector General, explaining exactly what laws were being violated, what laws were not being enforced. And we just told the public the truth, because I think our oath that we take as federal workers, that we're going to defend the Constitution and the American people, demanded that we not stay silent this moment, regardless of the risk to us. So that's what we did.
And approximately how many workers are working at HUD now, or maybe were working in the beginning of the year, serving the country?
I believe it was over 8,000 at the start of the year. Mm-hmm. And now it's down to like 4,500, 5,000. Mm-hmm. So it's been a huge cut. And yeah. especially in the parts that anticipated that they would be fired or that their work would be restricted, such as the civil rights offices. We lost a huge amount of the investigators that investigate civil rights, and no cases can go forward unless people are there to investigate in the first place. So this has huge effects down the line.
So 2 weeks ago, give us an idea of what unions collaborated with you in filing this report, and perhaps what other organizations joined you.
Sure. So my union is the American Federation of Government Employees. I'm a steward with them at Local 476. And everything I'm saying is as a steward and in my personal capacity. but yes, AFGE, we made sure to bring them in, and they have been providing us support the whole way. They've been connecting to the wider labor movement. So the AFL unions and the other federal unions, they've been providing advice, legal support, just support from within the building. Everything that I couldn't have done what I did and our coworkers, we couldn't have done it without having the backing of our union and knowing that they would do whatever they needed to do to defend us if something negative did happen. Mm-hmm. So that has been amazing to have. And that's what worker solidarity can do, because it's not just about filing grievances or like protecting a paycheck. Having a union in my workplace allowed me to have the courage to do something that could actually make a difference, to tell the public what's happening to their rights so that we can all come to the defense of those rights. That was only possible through worker solidarity and having a union. So when you see unions being canceled, or like the president attempting to cancel and destroy the unions throughout the federal sector, that's what you're losing. You're losing the freedom for workers to actually tell you the truth and feel secure enough to whistleblow and to advocate for your services. That's what it means.
Absolutely. And so AFG, and I'm actually an AFG retiree, so I'm very proud as well of what AFG is doing. And there were other unions that stood up to support what you were sharing a couple of weeks ago. Do you want to mention some of the other unions as well?
Yes. So all the unions related to housing are important to this battle. I mean, construction unions, the other federal unions, SEIU, I mean, all of them are important to this battle, because every single worker in this country is touched by housing. Everyone needs shelter, a roof over their head, and housing connects to your work, your school, your healthcare, your physical safety, everything. So the unions are going to be incredibly important to this fight, because this can't just be an internal fight to HUD workers and to the federal government. This has to be something where all working people recognize how important housing is, and we're all making that effort to contact our members of Congress, to contact the people at HUD that are making decisions that may not be favorable to housing. And we're working on creating that partnership. We've already been doing that with civil rights groups. So a lot of the major ones have been supporting us in our efforts, the NAACP, the National Fair Housing Alliance. All of these groups are throwing down. They've made statements. They've released press releases. They've made sure to speak out in our favor to talk about what's happening to housing in this country. And we want to see even more of that. And federal workers will hopefully be central to that.
Absolutely. And of course, housing is directly connected to other things like people's health. If you're not living in a decent place, your health is going to be impacted and more. So I don't know, Paul, if you want to share what happened last Monday, or if not, perhaps continue to describe what we are losing when HUD is not carrying out the mandates that it was created to institute.
Sure. So last Monday, got a sudden email inviting me to a discussion, and in that meeting, I was given a recommendation for removal for speaking out. And it's really sad that that happened, because what I was talking about was, I mean, your basic ability to actually go to the government and get free legal help to protect your rights. And this is stuff that cannot be done by contractors or AI or like collections of states. Because a lot of the time we're talking about investigating and litigating against huge banks or states themselves. Like if the state of Maryland decided that it didn't want to allow people with children to live in their public housing, there's no one else who would make sure to stop that from happening other than our office and HUD. So when you lose the staff that actually does that work, you're losing the ability to get help. When the cases that we can bring are restricted, that means that if you are having an issue of that type, you can't get the free legal help that you need. When if you use a voucher to actually have housing, if HUD isn't making sure that the various housing authorities or the landlords are complying with civil rights laws and not kicking you out for having a disability or for being a survivor of domestic violence, like that is happening all the time in this country. I was on that team, and now I'm no longer on that team, able to help survivors in life and death situations. So that's what the people are losing. It's not about me. If I can make it so that everyone else got to stay and our work was unrestricted and we could help the American people to the fullest, but I lost my job, I would take that 10 times out of 10. It's about the public and what they're losing. So from investigation to settlement to every element of what HUD is supposed to do, that is being dismantled, essentially. And that's why we had to tell Congress that and tell the American people that, because these laws are too crucial. They're too important to having a fair society. I mean, they affect your ability to even vote. I mean, if you can't live where you want to live, then your political power is destroyed by that, because you can only vote where you live. It's just so many things are affected by this.
Absolutely. And not only where you want to live, but where you are able to live in terms of the cost of the rental costs or whatever for you to live in an affordable place. Again, we're talking to Paul Asodebe. He is, many of us consider him a hero. He is an activist with the fund Federal Unionist Network, which has been doing a lot this year, to say the least, representing, and actually fund represents across the country, I think 50,000 federal workers across the country, and definitely quite a lot in the D.C. area. So Paul is an activist with FUN. And as he said, just repeat again, Paul, what happened a week ago this Monday?
Yes. So I was recommended to be removed for whistleblowing. And it's a tragedy, just because I'm not allowed to serve the people anymore. That's what I came here to do, moved across the country specifically to work on civil rights law and to improve people's lives, to make the country fair place, and to be kind of punished for doing that and for trying to protect that, it's really sad. But I'm absolutely not going to stop fighting for people. That's why I'm still talking to you. That's why I'm still trying to organize with everyone who cares about housing, which should be all of us, and continuing to do my part, because that's what my oath means to me, to protect the people, even when they're being attacked by their own government.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we the people are being attacked, not just in housing, certainly with healthcare, and much, much more. But before we move on, we're going to, in a few minutes, talk about what some of the things FUN is doing in the next couple of weeks. But I'm going to play a very special song. I'm going to play it in honor of Paul, but in honor of all of us, a song that many of you know, but this one is sung by a young lady, a little girl. So let's hear Solidarity Forever from the point of view of a young person. That was Solidarity Forever by a young girl named Precious Ernest. And earlier in the show, we opened up with Which Side Are You On by Dropkick Murphy. And that both of these songs were requested by Paul. I especially love hearing both of these songs that I grew up when I was quite young. I'm glad the songs are still around. So, Paul, we have about 10 minutes left. Let's jump for a minute talking about some of the upcoming activities of FUN, Federal Unionist Network, and perhaps how people who do not know about FUN can get involved. But I see there are at least three events in October. Do sure. you want to share them, or I have them?
Yeah. So first I'll give a brief little overview of what FUN is. So the Federal Unionist Network, or the FU Network, is a group of federal workers and our allies who are organizing in our workplaces all across the federal government. And that's across unions, across agencies, across areas of the country, to strengthen our unions, to make them fighting unions and the type of unions that can stand up to the attacks that we're facing right now, and the type of union who can continue to protect our agencies even without a contract. Even if the president says you don't have a union, when workers are the union, no one can tell you that you don't have a union, and you can still be strong, effective, and protect your dignity and the public as a federal worker. So that's what we do. We do it through training, through solidarity, through trying to have some fun, even in dark moments like this. And that's what the events that are happening over the next couple of weeks are about. So the first one I want to talk about is actually today, tonight at 6 p.m. at Aslan Brewing in D.C. on 14th Street. There's going to be a happy hour. It's for federal workers, for allies, anyone who wants to organize, who wants to just get some drinks with other federal workers and talk about what you can do in your workplace to defend your agency and your coworkers. We have those, and they get pretty good turnout, and they're always really, really enjoyable. If you want a situation where you can actually talk to like-minded strangers maybe make some connections, make some friends. This is a great way to do that. The next thing is on Sunday, the 19th, there's going to be a worker circle at Malcolm X Park. It's going to be a potluck, and then the worker circle is going to start at 1 and go till 2:30. And it's a joint project between FUN and EWOC, the Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee. Mm. And if you're not familiar with a worker circle, it's basically a space for workers to come together and talk through the problems and challenges that they're facing in the workplaces they attempt to organize. You can just talk to other workers who are experiencing similar issues and experienced organizers who have dealt with what you're dealing with before. And it's just kind of a way of recognizing that workers are the ones who actually have the answers to our problems. Just by talking with each other and showing each other that we're not alone and that we don't need to reinvent the wheel all the time, and that there are worker-based, solidarity-based answers to our problems, we can grow a lot in our organizing and just honestly feel more empowered in a moment like this where we're kind of feeling constantly under attack.
Yes, and actually I believe the concept of workers' circles started in the early 1900s, if I'm remembering it correctly. I used to hear about them in New York City all the time, so I'm glad that concept is still here with us. And say again the name of the other group you mentioned that would be there.
Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee. They're a group that, one of the groups that actually inspired FUN and how we do things. They help people organize wherever you are, public or private sector. If you need help starting a union, making your union stronger, if you need help with training, with strategizing, any of that, EWOC is great for that.
And are they a national group or a local?
They're a national group. Ooh, anywhere, okay. Anywhere you are, even if it doesn't make sense for some of the larger unions to come down and help you, maybe you're in a small unit or like a sensitive area where organizing is not going to be easy, EWOC can help you organize.
Okay, terrific. We just have a couple of minutes left, so share with us, Paul, your final thoughts or words.
Yes, there's one more big event on Saturday, the 25th. We're having a training called Organize to Win, and it's a free one-day training in person for federal workers, former federal workers, people who want to organize, whether you have a union or don't have one. This is a training that's following the Labor Notes curriculum. And if people aren't familiar with Labor Notes, they are a magazine and training organization that tries to really strengthen unions and get them much more focused on rank and file power, the type of power that's durable and that's really can survive any attack and really build something strong in the workplace. So it's a one-day training, and it's going to give people the skills that they need to fight back in this moment. So if you're a federal worker that's wondering, what can I do to actually have a strong union in a moment like this when they're under such attack? What can I do to bring my coworkers to see that there actually are things that they can do to respond to this moment? If you need help with your specific situation in your workplace, this is a training that's going to help you understand what you can actually do. And
so how can people find out about participating?
So the training, you can go to bit.ly/FUNOTW, and that's the registration link. You can sign up through that. Again, that's bit.ly/FUNOTW. And again, it's free, but we are asking people to bring multiple people from their agency. So bring your friends, bring your people that want to do something. And we ask that people, if you're bringing multiple people, that you sponsor the training at $250 per local or more if you have the money. But either way, it's going to be free.
So, and tell us the time again.
It will be from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday, the 25th.
Okay, terrific. And perhaps we can share those details in our social justice calendar. Paul Asadebe, those of us who know you are very proud of you. You represent a lot of us who believe in fighting back. And those of you listeners who don't know Paul, take note, he's a young man, a young activist who's fighting to make a difference on behalf of all of us. So thank you so much, Paul. And you may want to stay on and listen to the next two young ladies who are going to be talking about things related to workers. But again, thank you so much for joining us. And we hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. And you're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM. This is me, Joni, with To Heal DC. We're going to be spending the rest of the hour, the next half hour, talking about a very special project. We are the 92%. You're going to hear what that means, but we're going to introduce it with a special song.
I don't know how my mother walked her trouble down. I don't know how my father stood his ground. I don't know how my people survived slavery. I do remember, that's why I believe.
Okay, you guys. excuse me, sometimes I start to cry with these songs. Cheryl?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, please start us off. This Cheryl, some people may remember Cheryl from many years ago when I first met her in the 90s, when I first started working with WPFW with our beloved Tom Porter, who some of us consider him to be the godfather of WPFW. And
that's right.
Lo and behold, who was there right by Tom's side. But Cheryl and we did a lot. When I first started this show in 1992, we were doing all kinds of special stuff with my friend Michelle Tinglin Clemens. We actually had a national show on the need for universal health care, mm-hmm. and many other special projects. But it was a pleasure and a joy to work with Cheryl way back then.
Yes, way back then, Joni. And what sticks out in my mind, you know the story, is the time that you took us underground into the sewer to do a news story. So,
yes, that was.
Yes, you've always had the heart for the news.
But no, that was not the heart for the news. That was the heart for the labor movement. Okay. That was America. Ask me the union, yes. The union that Dr. King was working with down in Memphis when he was killed. Yes. With the sewer, the sanitation workers, black sanitation workers were not allowed to join the union. So we talked with the black sanitation workers in D.C. and Memphis. And so one of the sanitation workers suggested that Tom take a tour of the sewers. So anyway, that's how Cheryl and I, one of the ways we first started.
And I can quickly reintroduce myself. It's
yes,
been many years
do.
Since then. And so I've actually had the good fortune of having all of the work since my time at WPFW, 25 years or so, even more than that. It's always been aligned with my beliefs, thank goodness. But my cultural and political foundation, as Joni was talking about, was poured and hardened right there at WPFW, where I worked and learned so much from everybody and from Tom Porter, who was my boss for almost 4 years. And those years really opened up my worldview. Joni, you know what I mean.
Yes, yes.
So, like in the past, I had the opportunity to be like a student host to people like the late Shirley Chisholm and Judge A. Leon Higginbotham and even Kwame Ture. But at the time, I didn't have any strong context for me being in the presence of all of that greatness. And it wasn't until that I had that experience at the station where I was exposed to incredible books and music and people like Jack O'Dell and Elaine Brown from the Panther Party and Dr. Grosbeck Parham, who now leads a section of the World Health Organization, did all of that ever come together for me? So ever since then, you know, thank goodness, my social justice interests have been able to be satisfied in all the work that I've been able to do since then.
Absolutely. I also want to thank Cheryl and acknowledge that I asked Cheryl to suggest some songs. She sent me so many fabulous sisters, vocalists. We could have spent the whole hour with the music that Cheryl suggested. So thank you. And I could tell some of that was your PFW experience. Okay. So I'm sorry. Introduce our wonderful second guest.
Yes. And so for this project, which is called We the 92%, the co-author or co-editor with me for this project is Sonia Gray. And we've had a wonderful time working together in the past. I knew Sonia was special because one day we've been working on climate change issues and environmental health and environmental justice issues. And one day she came to the office with a Langston Hughes book and said, "Do you like Simple?" And I was like, "You are speaking my language." So let me turn the floor over to Sonia so she could introduce herself. She's got a wonderful history.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Cheryl. And thank you, Joni. It's a pleasure to be here. And I guess I need to continue with my thank yous. I call Tom Porter Mr. Tom in terms of all due respect to the work that he's doing and the support that he renders to the community. So wanted to do a quote-unquote shout-out to Mr. Tom and to all of the folks that make WPFW the famous radio station that it is. I really am honored to be here. I am Sonia Hunt Gray, and I have a 30-year career as relates to public health and health equity and just looking at health disparities and all of the things that make for everyone having an opportunity to have the health care that they need and deserve. And so Cheryl and I are colleagues and friends, but I don't know if I would be going to any sewers, any underground sewers with her, but I'll go just about everywhere but the sewers. Cheryl.
Well, welcome, Sonia. I'm so glad to meet you.
Thank you.
Yes, yes, yes. And so you both have initiated a very special project called We Are the 92%. And when I first saw it, I was looking and wondering what it is. So Cheryl, if you want to jump in and share, what does We Are the 92% mean and refer to and the special project that you and Sonia have launched?
Sure. And I can take it directly from what we've written for sort of a public service announcement. And so it's We the 92%, similar to We the People. Mm-hmm. So this is a special, and thank you, Joni, for making this possible. This is a special invitation for a call for entries, inviting Black women to contribute their essays, poetry, short stories, you know, prayers of resistance, to submit them to We the 92%. And what that is an anthology for this time to preserve Black women's voices through truth and testimony when our history is being rewritten, challenged, and erased. And the name comes from the 92% of Black women in the United States who voted to protect democracy, who voted to protect the rights and resources for everybody in 2024, because this is not what we asked for, what we were experiencing. So this call for entries is for current and formal federal workers, other workers, including unemployed workers, union and non-union, business owners, mothers, daughters, sisters, grandmothers, students, you, whoever's listening. So Black women across the country, we are encouraging you to submit essays, poetry, short stories, any other kind of literary expression about this time by midnight, October 31st. And you will want to get more information about this. You go to our website, wethe92percent.com. Now, there's a different experience. If you go through, I prefer the laptop and mobile, tablet version of the website, because you get to see more of the color and artistry behind and the culture behind this call. On your phone, you can still access everything, but it's a slightly different experience. So that's the outline.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Sonia.
Thank you, Joni. Uh-huh. Thank you, Cheryl. If I may add a little bit in terms of that, what we want to also, you know, as Cheryl has stated, this is such a perfect time in terms and a perfect show. The name of the show is To Heal DC. The book, in fact, will help to heal the world, if you will. I have those what they call them, delusions of grandeur. This is not a delusion. This is something that writing is healing. Mm-hmm. Everybody can write. Everybody can share. And this is a book that gives one the opportunity to make your voice heard, to make your ideas, your perspective, your opinion heard, and be a part of this historic document, if you will. And so what I just wanted to share is about the healing part and about the everybody part. Everybody can be a part of it. And at the end of the day, it's like, what is it? At the end, it's an opportunity for you to share. And some of the folks to date that and Cheryl can share as well, we've gotten some entries already that will just, Joni, I think I'm a big crybaby too. So I'm not saying you're a crybaby, but I'm just saying in terms of the emotion and the empathy. But some of the entries that we've received have just brought us to tears in terms of how people are feeling, how important it is, not just to us, but to other women. We have the good fortune, if you will, to have Dr. Joycelyn Elders, who is the first African-American Surgeon General and African-American woman Surgeon General to actually do our forward. And she said that she was honored to do our forward and happy to do that because of how important this work is. And I just wanted to share that this work goes from the Surgeon General of the land in terms of health and to any and everybody, no limit on ages. You had a young lady who was singing. She may want to do a submission. All submissions are welcome. So I just wanted to add that to what Cheryl had already shared.
And Joni, if I can add just a little bit more.
Sure.
Just to pick up on what Sonia said, this is about everyday Black women. We want to hear, you know, from everyone. This is not an anthology that's just chock full of celebrity stories. You know, we will want to gather like the interviews or opinions from some notable luminaries, but we really do want to focus on every voice. And so, you know, history shows us that, you know, the slave narratives exist to be able to tell us what was happening during that time. And over the years, there have been anthologies by Black women, Toni Cade Bambara's an anthology from the 70s, and Homegirls by Barbara Smith in the 80s, and then Terry McMillan did one in the 90s. And then Professor Brittany Cooper did one in the early 20s, which had more of a hip hop kind of flair. And we don't know what to call this time that we were experiencing. It is not civil rights. It's some kind of monster time that we're in. Mm-hmm. We really need for an anthology like this to collect the voices and experiences of what is happening so that we can read it now once it's published, and it'll be there for history's sake so that future generations will be able to understand how it is that we made it through that time, through this time.
I have a male mentor who is a WPFW supporter, Dr. Roscoe Moore, a Rear Admiral, retired Rear Admiral from the Public Health Service. And he always reminds me that these are not normal times.
And right. So,
that's my mantra for where we are.
And actually, Clarence Lussain, who many listeners know, just was on Julianne Maveau's show, and she said exactly these. He said the exact same thing. These are not normal times. It's so inspiring what you're doing. I wish I could just spend the next rest of the October trying to encourage Black women and young. I was going to ask you about the age. So what about children, under 15, or is there an age limit? I mean, because, there are children who would have things to say. I'm just wondering.
No, and Sonia, I think you addressed that earlier. There is no age limit.
Okay.
You were even asking the young lady that sang the song. You said it was a voice.
You
hear all voices.
Now, I have to check her. I don't know her. She may not live in this country. I'm assuming you want people from...
No, yes, of course, but I was using that as an example.
Yes.
Young voices, all voices need to be heard and ought to be heard, and we are opening this opportunity for all voices, including our own. So, Cheryl, you better get yours in on time.
That's right.
We're gonna give this out again, but just say again real quickly, if people want to submit, make a submission to you, how do they do that?
Yeah, so the website, please go to it. It's it's we the 92.com. I'm sorry, we the 92.com.
Okay.
And so there you will find a lot of information that you're looking for. One thing that I do want to point out is that we have at the very top of the website, if you're using laptop or desktop, there's a section where you can put in your email address so that you will be notified of some potential upcoming writing workshops that we're working on to help people go from concept to actual submission. You may be a person who uses a diary every day and you pour your heart out into a diary. You may want to submit something, but want to know how to elevate it from a personal diary piece to a piece that can go into an anthology that's amplified for everyone to read. Or you may be working on a prayer of resistance and just need those words, need a writing coach to help you put your paragraphs in a particular order that will speak to people. So we're hoping to have that happen. But if you sign up, put your email address in there, you will be getting reminders from us that the deadline is coming up, and words of encouragement to help you along the way to make the deadline and get your submission in so that you can be a part of this anthology.
Another thing that we added, I know, Joni, it sounds like we're taking over your show, but
that's what you're supposed to do.
But one thing, we were talking to our publisher, Yay, and she asked us.
Yay.
she is the author of a book called Chasing Butterflies in the Sunlight, and her name is Marika Oyinusi. Her publishing company is Paradise Restore. But one thing that she asks is, like, do you guys have support, and what does your team look like? And our team keeps evolving. And if folks are out there that are interested, please let us know. But one thing that we're doing that, and I'll pitch to Cheryl because I know she was excited about talking about this, is that we're planning to have a couple of writing workshops. so that people can prepare and be ready. I know some folks have read their entries to us to just, you know, so that, I mean, it's just exciting. These are not normal times, and this is not a normal everyday anthology, but we're going to have some writing workshops with writing coaches so that people can just feel as comfortable as they can. Right, Cheryl?
Yes. And we're sitting here all grins today, but believe us, we are experiencing the chaos, the confusion, the uncertainty, just being discounted and dismissed and erased, just like everyone else is. And I just wanted to let the audience know that we are the same people. This is, you know, this is us. We are all experiencing this at the same time.
Absolutely. And so I just want to jump in and say, I'm hoping, for example, that there are union women, mm-hmm. just people that are involved with either the federal union workers who are definitely under attack right now, or other unions, including, for example, teachers. Let's hear it from some of the sisters who are teachers. That would be so wonderful to hear from teachers from across the country. So a whole range of women, or women who are cleaning people's houses, and you know, a mixture of women would be very, very exciting and very important to get people. Or, you know, let's hear, I would love to hear from Chicago, from some sisters from Chicago, from what's happening there now, or from New York City, from Texas. You know, it's such an exciting project to get a mixture of Black women, mixture of age and a mixture of backgrounds and experience, including poets.
Yeah.
And that's what you said, Joni. That's so interesting. We just got a note from one of our dear colleagues, and she shared, can folks submit song and or video files?
Yes.
You can submit whatever it is that gives you joy and that you state as, this is my creativity and I stand on that. And photo entries, yes.
And it's interesting that you mentioned poetry too.
Yes, yes.
Because you know Amiri Baraka's work. So someone sent in five haikus.
Wow.
And so Amiri Baraka's interpretation of the haiku is the loku. Some people out there might know.
Yes.
And so just messing around, for people who don't know what a haiku is, it's a very short poem. Mm-hmm. It's 575.
And yes. So
this morning I was messing around and just put together a couple just to give people a flavor of the kinds of things that they can do. So the aftermath. Still we tend the flame, hands blistered but unshaken. Hope hums in our bones. And that's it.
Yes. And let me just say right now that it's Amiri Baraka's birthday is tomorrow.
There you go.
And if I didn't have you both beautiful sisters on, I would have played his, I forget what it's called. Who's to blame for all these terrible things? So Amiri Baraka is also part of PFW family. We have less than a minute left.
A minute? You just started.
Yes. But that's what we have. And I'm hopefully you'll be on other shows, and you know, we're going to have you back again, but
thank you.
Let me just quickly give the thank yous. I want to thank, of course, our wonderful engineer, Magic Mike. We couldn't do any of this without him. I also want to mention that Ayanna Gregory is performing with Free Benjamin this Friday, from six to eight. Let me see real quick. Brentwood Arts Exchange in Brentwood, Maryland. And again, tomorrow is an all-day discussion of the genocide in Gaza. Stay tuned for Mark Thompson, Make It Plain. Okay, we have a minute left. Cheryl, take it away.
Can I have half of the minute, Cheryl?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. So I'm just going to push the website. Everyone, please go to wethe92.com. There you'll find all the information that you need, how to submit, how many, you know, the word count, everything. I'm also there. You'll find a link to the We the 92% Red Cap, which is an answer, a clapback to the other Red Cap. So there you go, Sonia.
And we're going
to on mute. Go ahead, Sonia.
In my 30 seconds, I just wanted to give a shout out to my mother, Murdy Hunt, 85 years old, a registered nurse, a person who believes in freedom. I would be remiss if I did not also say a shout out to my mother-in-law, Victoria Jackson Gray Adams. I hope everyone knows who she is.
Yes.
She was one of the early members of the Freedom Party and with Fannie Lou Hamer and Annie Devine. And we all know.
Okay, and of course it's Fannie Lou Hamer's birthday this week too.
But there I'm you
gonna,
go.
Okay, I'm going to want to talk to you both when we hang up. I'm going to call you back on the phone.
Okay.
Thank you and stay tuned.
Thank you.
We were going to go out with Angelique Kidjo, but we may not have time.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. Support from listeners like you are the tools that have built WPFW over nearly 5 decades. We provide news, music worth listening to, and in-depth conversations about your community and the world. One of the many ways that you could contribute is to donate a vehicle that you no longer need, running or not. It can do wonders for WPFW, so donate it for a tax break for 2024. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
On Tuesday, October 7, 5 a.m. until midnight, WPFW presents What Breaks the Heart, joining millions around the world and marking 2 years of genocide in Gaza through interviews, stories, and poetry. The day programming will reflect the cultural and political concept of Palestinian Sumud, highlighting the enduring presence, resistance, and connection of the Palestinian people to their land. That's What Breaks the Heart, commemorating 2 years of genocide in Gaza. Tuesday, October 7th, 5 a.m. until midnight on WPFW. Building a more compassionate world, one broadcast at a time.
WPFW has offered inspiring music, poignant stories, and critical journalism for over 48 years. Whether reminiscing while hearing Nina Simone or learning about the harm done due to gross global inequity, WPFW has been the soundtrack for moments of revelation, joy, sadness, and resistance. It's your generosity that allows us to continue this tradition of expansive, emancipatory excellence in community radio. We ask you to once again be in solidarity with WPFW during our fall pledge drive by donating at WPFWFM.org and additionally from October 12th through the 25th at 800-222-9739. There is only one WPFW and only one you, the listener, who is committed to keeping independent music and message available to the people. Your generosity sustains and challenges us to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The Birchmere presents The Whispers on October 10th and 11th and Keiko Matsui November 2nd. Details at birchmere.com.
The DC Palestinian Film and Arts Festival is back this October with powerful Palestinian storytelling through live performance, films, and discussions with artists and activists, a culinary workshop, and a special children's program. The festival kicks off on Thursday, October 9th, and runs through Sunday, October 12th at MLK Library and other venues. On Friday evening, the festival will present the DC premiere of A State of Passion, which follows Dr. Ghassan Abu Sittah, who, after working around the clock in Gaza under relentless bombardment, has become the face of a global resistance. Details at dcpfaf.org.
Award-winning former police officer and criminal justice adjunct professor.